The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbess of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. My name is Hojin. If we haven't met, I use the pronouns she and her. We're on the land of the Lenape here at the temple in Brooklyn. And I'd like to share with you a very basic teaching today, which I think will help many of you who are just getting started in Zazen and help those of us who have been doing it for a long time to return to the basics. This is a practice instruction by Master Hongzhi, 11th century master in China, resting in the hundreds of streams. Just resting is like the great ocean accepting hundreds of streams, all absorbed in one flavor. A practitioner of the way follows movement and responds to changes in total harmony. Moreover, haven't you yourself established the mind that thinks up all the illusory conditions? This insight must be perfectly incorporated. Discontinue leaks and do not act on them. I love Hongzhi. I often say if I could meet him today, I would just lay on my back and look at the clouds and have me read his poetry to me. So beautiful. So he starts off just resting like the great ocean, which accepts all these hundreds of streams, all absorbed in this one flavor. What kind of state of being? And in a sense, Zazen, the seated meditation that we have at the heart of Zen training, of Zen practice, is that one taste, allows us to be that giant ocean and allow all those streams to come flowing in and yet touch a still point within us. A practitioner of the way follows the movement and responds to changes in total harmony, absorbed in one flavor. The Buddha said, just as in the great ocean there is but one taste, the taste of salt, so in these teachings there is but one taste, the taste of liberation. What does that mean, that word? Liberating what? Has to be liberated from something. We're already actually liberated, is what the Buddha said. So the liberation, in a sense, is liberating the obstacles or the conditions, the illusory conditions that we've created. And that's kind of in the way of our seeing things as they are. It's like the moon is always shining, but there's these clouds that we see that obscure sometimes, and we don't know that it's out. And the moon is your mind. Your awakened mind is always out, is always shining brightly. So what can we learn from Zazen? It's very mysterious and plain, and has a vigor and an ease. But how does it teach us to live wise and generous lives? And as he says, discontinue the leaks. What's he talking about? Is he a plumber? What are these leaks? And don't act on them. So what are these leaks? How do we leak? the vital energy that we need to awaken, because it needs a very, we need our energy in all that we're encountering to remember that we're trying to see things, phenomena, and learn what it is. And whether we take up zazen or engage other forms of practice, we have a lot of guidance, lots of wise beings, past and present, and encouraging us to this deeply relax, just rest into the truth of our own perfection, as the Buddha said, and not repress or cut off any aspects of ourself. There's nothing to get rid of. You know, if you ever hear yourself saying, if I didn't have that, then, if this was only gone, then. But we just need to see what that is, and we can be thankful to whatever that thing is that's wrapping us up, because it's showing us that our clarity is functioning. I came to learn that confusion just meant something clear wants to come through that's already there, but we're confused about it. So it's not a bad thing. So these are practice instruction. And, you know, the thing about zazen is we don't really know what happens when we sit down and take this profound turning inward. Buddha called it a revolution. And it's moment to moment, really being where we are with whatever we are. That's the spiritual training. So we have forms to set us free. So you might be here for the first time and think, wow, there's a lot of forms here, a lot of ritual, a lot of do this, turn this way. And that's so we can just relax, if we can see it that way. So we speak of skillful means, but nothing's skillful unless we make it skillful. So this is offered a form that we can enter, so it becomes simplified. How we can just walk, how we can just sit, just chant, just bow. So we can fold right into the form and see our minds clearly. The danger is we can go to sleep in form as well. So that's where that vigor needs to be as we're at ease, which takes a while. When your first time's here, I remember how I felt. It's all new. We can expect that. So in a sense, when we come into the Zendo, we come in as that question of, where am I? Who am I? Where am I? Who am I? You know, and sometimes our bodies are clearly here, but our mind is not. We know this. We're physically here, but we're not really here. We're often, if you begin to study, somewhere else. Somewhere else. And why might that be important to want to be fully present? That's what you need to feel inside yourself and test. Why do it? Why let go and return to being present? That's more important. Not what I say about it. I love this. I just got this morning. I've been reading Ajahn Chah. He is a forest monk. And he's very kind and also can be very cutting. But he says, try to be mindful and let things take their natural course. Then your mind will become still in any surroundings, like a clear forest pool. All kinds of wonderful, rare animals will come to drink at the pool, and you will clearly see the nature of all things. You will see many strange and wonderful things come and go, but you will be still. This is the happiness of the Buddha. So as we sit in that stillness, don't we get all these visitors coming to our pool? All kinds of strange ones. Perhaps our whole family will come. Whatever needs to will show up if it's got some energy in it and appears, but we can just see it for what it is. I remember reading William James' Varieties of Religious Experience. It's a very well-known book. And he did an experiment around the turn of the 19th century, and he wanted to see how long this is back then, okay, it might be shorter now, how long the average person could actually concentrate. So he used the example of a bird sitting on a tree limb. So how long do you think we keep our full concentration completely on the bird? He said 4.7 seconds. 4.7 seconds to focus and concentrate on that bird before our attention flies off. Our attention can return, and that's what we're doing in practice, where the bird takes flight, we notice, we bring it back to a branch, right? And we keep doing that. It builds concentration, jariki. But how long is that flight away? So if we take a period of zazen and look at it, how long before your attention returns to right here? So it might be just a few moments, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, a half an hour, a year, a lifetime. Yeah, a lifetime. Some might be always flying from cradle to death, off the branch, flying. And that gap, in a sense, we say is where suffering emerges, because we're not doing where we are. We're someplace else. There's a departure from fully experiencing. And that's something we can really test. Just in our simple activities, you'll feel it and see it for yourself. That's why we say it's direct experience. No one can give you that. You're washing the dishes, and we say don't wander in your mind and think about things. We each have to test that and see the difference and why we would want to do it, because that makes our wanting to do it or our practice stronger, coming from that place. And my teacher used to say, Daido Roshi, I have two teachers, Daido passed away in 2009. He used to say, an unexamined mind is a very dangerous one. When we don't know what's moving us to act. We don't always know, but sometimes our moral compass will feel something when it's off, and we can adjust. And it's not a sin that our mind wanders. It's what the brain does. It's what we've learned to do. Our attention wanders. And it's the freedom of our mind. So I can go to the past. I can go to the future. I can fantasize. I can do artwork and imagine worlds and worlds. That's the freedom. We can use it in that way. Thinking is not the problem, but it's when we want to be fully in something, fully embodied and connected, we have a hard time doing that. We don't understand what that is. To put our mind where we want it and to have it rest there so we can see the inflow of streams, hundreds of streams, and be still for as long as we need it. Daido was very quiet. His concentration, his samadhi was so, like, you could be standing there and he'll say something and you're like, you didn't even feel him come near you. He didn't have a lot of traces like that. I remember people being very startled because he would just suddenly appear out of the mist. It's because he was quiet. He was doing what he was doing. He wasn't ahead or behind. That's what I felt like. He's just relaxed in himself. I've met other people like that. We feel that. That's what we can give. That's what we give to one another, is that stillness, no fear. There is a quote by Master Dogen, who we use a lot. It says, "The zazen of even one person at one moment imperceptibly accords with all things and fully resonates through all time." The zazen of even one person, you, at one moment imperceptibly, so it's perceived, but we can't grab it or see it, accords with all things in that moment and fully resonates through all time. So when we do that, that is being put out into the rest of this world at any moment. So he's talking to us directly, so we should take that in. I remembered we used to open the doors for zazen downstairs in the zendo, and we were all sitting, because it was a hot summer day, and somebody was on their cell phone just with their back to the zendo, yakking it up. And we're all sitting there, you know, and then they turn around and they see all the bodies sitting, and they just went, whoosh, just like that. And then they started saying, "I don't know what I'm looking at. Looks like a bunch of tree stumps," because we were all in silhouette, black inside. But you could feel the stillness just hit them like a ton of bricks in that moment, the surprise. And I always think of Daido, who would always say, "Really trust yourself." And how much I've relied on that, those words. Really trust yourself. Trust in ourselves, in this groundless ground, in this ungraspable, nothing to everything slipping away, impermanent life, uncertain world. Because so much of what happens can't be seen or explained when we sit. Can't be measured, so don't measure your zazen. If you continue to sit, it's not a good sit or a bad sit. Whatever you saw, good sit. Always, always a good sit. Even if your mind is spinning and you look at it and you see it, good sit. Even if you're flying around, good sit. Because you can say that. So there's a measure of joy, even though it's frustrating. We want to quiet down, but we can't force. But we can keep relaxing and seeing the streams for what they are and releasing them to the ocean. Years ago, we had a children's program, and Daido liked sort of plays. So he got dressed up like a forest wizard. And he told a rendition of a Zen koan to these little kids. They were about 5 to 10 or something. And there was one boy, and he was asking them questions. So he presented a koan, and you should have heard these kids answering. They were like, so got it, you know. We're all sitting there for 10 years, and they're like, yeah, it's like this, you know. They just do it with their hands. They know exactly what it is, you know. And we're like, oh. And this one boy, he kept, you know, before the koan was even done, he's raising his hand, Bobby Leonard, raising his hand, raising his hand, raising his hand. And finally, Dida says, "Bobby, do you want to ask a question?" And he's like, "Show me a magic trick." So Dida says, "Okay, come up here. Okay, stand in front of me. Get your feet on the floor. Now I want you to do what I tell you, and you'll see." He says, "Close your eyes. Now take a deep breath. And don't lose your connection to your breath. Take a deep breath. So Bobby closes his eyes and he takes a deep breath. Let it out. Stay right there. Now breathe in. Bobby does it. Now let it out. A few more times. And then he does it one last time. Now breathe in. Stay with it. Right there. Breathe it out. Bobby's eyes pop open. And Dido says, now that's magic. And before COVID, this boy, man, young man, young person, I should say, walks in, and I'm looking at them and looks very familiar. And he says, hi, Hojin, remember me? I'm Bobby Leonard. I was like, oh my God, Bobby Leonard. He's 26. And he says to me, do you remember that magic trick the forest wizard did? He said, I still use that magic. It was great. So a vital part of Zazen is us learning how to trust ourselves and this path and the fact that we can awaken because we are that. We are that. In Dido's description of Zazen in his book, The Eight Gates, he writes, and some of you may remember him saying this at every Zen training weekend. I do, because I was there for most of them. Zen is not meditation. It's not contemplation. It's not introspection. It's not quieting the mind or focusing the mind. Zazen is sitting. It is a way of using our mind. It is a way of living our life and doing it with other people. Zazen is to recognize the unity of self in the 10,000 things. So to recognize what you're doing as the self, recognize what you're doing as mindfulness, recognize what you are doing as not mindfulness, not quieting the mind or focusing the mind, recognizing it as concentration and as not concentration. Zazen is how to study yourself. And when Daidoshi would speak about Zazen as the study with self, he would sometimes add, Zazen is the study of how to study the self. It's the study of how to find any degree of separation or distance from yourself, from your mind. So how do we begin sitting? We count the breath so we can get familiar with the landscape. It's like going to a place we've never been before. Sometimes when we encounter our mind so directly, we're just like, whoa, here's the landscape. See what's happening and use the breath as that anchor. And I remember when I first sat down, I was like, yeah, I've got a body. Yep. 35 minutes. Yep, definitely have a body. No doubt about it. And then at some time we shift from counting the breath to following the breath, to being the breath. And then in those degrees, tranquility starts to appear, true tranquility. We start to settle down. We start to feel that tranquility. We become at peace with ourselves, with our mind, with counting, with following, with being, with whatever arises out of our karma, our personal history. And everything around us is our karma, how we see it, perceive it, the sounds, the smells, the thoughts, all that. And in that intimacy, to really accept it as yourself. This is a quote from Shugen Roshu, who said, awareness of breathing is the original revolution. It is not just taking breaths of air. When we spend our whole lives turning away, seeking outside from others, and then one day we turn inward and stop wandering and cease comparing, this is the first revolution. Where exactly is within? How do we get there? What is the answer to the question of the breath? Hongzhi says, a practitioner of the way follows movement and responds to changes in total harmony. Moreover, haven't you yourself established the mind that thinks up the illusory conditions? This insight must be perfectly incorporated. Yeah, we have to keep incorporating that insight once we see, like, is this real, this thought? I mean, yes, it's happening, but insight into it. We have to keep incorporating that as we move through the world. Easier on our seat, but then we get up, and then there's like lots coming, right? Lots to deal with in phenomenal world. So Zen is a thoroughly human quest, and Zazen a thoroughly human practice. Do we need anything else to enter our humanity? Do we need to know anything else about Buddhism or the Dharma if we simply sit still and with gentleness, kindness, and precision and integrity bring our attention to anything and everything that is arising in our mind? What happens? To sit and turn our awareness inward is a teaching with such sheer directness that it reveals everything that gets in the way of that directness. Accepting hundreds of streams, all absorbed in one flavor. What is the one flavor? So concentration has, I mean, if you look it up, it's got lots of definitions. But it can be described as a particular state of awareness that's penetrating, unified, absorbing, focused, yet permeable, open, relaxed. So concentration doesn't mean we get tight. You know, so when we concentrate, it doesn't mean we get rigid. It has to do with that oceanic kind of openness, too. And it's hard to define, but when it's present, I think we know it. Like, and we know it when it's absent. Like, I came up the steps and there's some hydrangeas in a pot and I could feel concentration in that. You know, I could feel the shoes, like where, how the shoes were placed. Somebody concentrated, you all concentrated, how you put your shoes down. And I felt that. So it's present. We can recognize concentration and lack of it. So in beginning instruction, you may have learned about Jariki, right? The power of concentration. The ability to put your mind where you want it and to hold it there as long as you need to really come into the body and establish that kind of stability from the hara in the posture. Relaxed, yet with gravity held up, so that we're breathing fully and can let things move. And then we do the counting, the inhale and the exhale. And we bring it lower so we're not top heavy, right? Not bring it out of the head, down lower into the heart, down. So what is this discontinue the leaks? I call it jariki leaky. When our jariki, our concentration leaks, the Buddha spoke of the many ways we get distracted and leak concentration. And if we wanted to plumb the depths of being here, we need to recognize how our attention leaks and be able to plug it. So I'm going to mention a few that we can readily identify and heal. One is unnecessary talking, which takes the form of mindless chatter, elevating ourselves, putting others down, gossiping, and over-dramatizing. So if we do that, if you do that, can you feel it? How that takes us away from kind of wakefulness, the energy we need to create something more wholesome? Another leak is internal daydreams, planning too much inside, fantasizing, worrying, or random thoughts about nothing in particular. Worrying, it's a big loss. Gossiping, total leakage, total leakage. Sometimes, you know what gossip comes from? I don't know if you know this, the word. It used to be called God sip, sipping God. And then it turned into gossip. But there was a time we needed to talk about things and what we were doing in such a way that we were sipping God, sipping our completeness with each other. But then it kind of took a slide into gossip. And that really drains us. Doesn't feel so good. Unnecessary muscular tension. How we physically contract from the constant struggle to make our strategies work. How we want to control makes it tense. So we have to constantly be sort of telling ourselves and relinquishing that tension in our body. I used to sit with my head turned to one side for a long time when I first sat. I thought I was straight. I swear to God, if the monitor would come around and move my head, I felt like the Exorcist. I was like, you must be kidding me. Like, it was like, grrr. And I was like, oh, come on. And it was like, and I realized the more, so I was like, okay, pay attention. And when they did it, I was like trying to feel that correction. And it felt weird, but I started to, okay, trust it, see it. And I realized that I was having this subtle thought that I really didn't want. And I was going like this, like, don't come, don't bother me. And I would turn my head. And once I was able to get insight into that being present, I straightened out. So the body reflects back some of these tensions and knots that we have. They work together until, you know, Zazen, we start straightening out. So I remember first sitting down, and don't you feel like there's a hand going like this, or like, you know, like you're turning subtly and you're not, or you are. So these are kind of realignments happening. So that's okay. It can happen. Bodily tension reflects the configuration of our mind. When we try to win, please, hide, avoid discomfort, all of that effort is kind of a form of aggression to ourselves that we can see and plug and like be gentler, soften. You know, Buddha said, not too loose, not too tight, the middle way, not too loose, not too tight. And then the manifestation or avoiding negative emotions. Another leak. A sure energy squander, he says. negative emotions, not bad emotions, like an emotion that negates or denies, like, I don't want this. That's a negating. No to life. No to anger. No to irritability. I don't want this. Or we say, bug off. Get out of here. We get tense. We don't want to think about it. And it's just like, oh, this has come in. This has come in. It's a seed. And we can look at it. No judgment of ourselves. It comes as judgment. It arises as impatience. So, and how much slosh and slush in holding on to anger, how that drains. Oh my gosh, right? And what you might notice over a practiced life where you can see something's working is how you're able to let go and be with difficult feelings much more easily. That's a shift that you begin to see with Zazen. It still happens, but our reaction is different. We have more of a response and can develop an acceptance. In the space between desire and despair, between holding and letting go, between clinging and release, in this space is the unspoken thing, the thing that lives. That's from a novel called Lives of Monster Dogs, if you've ever read that, by Kirsten Backus. In the space between desire and despair, the space between desire and despair, the gap, the stillness, between holding and letting go, between clinging and release, is that unspoken thing, the thing that lives. I like that. Clarice Pinkola Estes, when speaking about this turning around into ourself, I like the way she says it. She wrote Women That Run With Wolves. She says, one of the most calming and powerful actions you can do to intervene in a stormy world is to stand up and show your inner soul or light. She calls it your soul light, or your inner workings of that light. Struggling souls catch light from other souls who are fully lit and willing to show it, that vulnerability. So we're pretty unknowable. The spoken things, that thing that lives, is unknowable. And this will feel uncomfortable, maybe for a long time. But Dogen does call this the gate of ease and joys. There's a lot of happiness in this recognition that we're not knowable. We can know things about things, but not really. It's not definitive. And that's why we don't give up or give in. You know, the oyster depends on grit getting in to make a pearl. I always like that. You can't make a pearl without grit. So we're the same way. But it feels awful with that grit. It rubs. But it's because we need to find something. There's something there important that we need to learn. And it's that. It's bringing that inquisitive peace to, that is the Dharma practice, is like not make, like, yeah. Yeah. So I'll end with some words on the Sutra of Fear and Death, Dread. This is something the Buddha wrote. I saw that in one of the sutras, the Sutra of Fear and Dread, and I'm like, yeah, I need that one. What does the Buddha have to say about fear and dread? Buddha asked himself, why do I always dwell in fear and dread? In other words, how do I discontinue the leaks and not act on them? How do I work with fear and dread arising and not act on it? He said, while I sat, while I laid down, if fear and dread came upon me, I stayed right there in that position until I subdued it, until I brought it down. My friend used to say, bring your elevator down. I like that. You're on the fourth floor. I used to get nervous doing service positions with people when I was young and training, and I had to tell them how to do things. I would get fearful, and then I would sound really mean, but really I was scared. And they used to say, God, Hojin gives like she feels angry when she's telling me how to ring a bell. And really, I was just scared. So I went over with, she said, just know that you're afraid first, and then wait until you subdue it, bring it down, allow it in, see, take stock that it's okay, what you're doing, make it clear what you need to do, and then meet the person. And I was like, oh, wow, that is so different. So different. So we know how to stay and be steady. We developed that. Gautama found his immovable spot, the conqueror, unconquerable position. Mara, who's the mind, Mara mind is, in our tradition, is Mara is the mind of our doubt and the things that turn us away from what we know is to be good, you know, that says, what are you doing? You shouldn't be doing that, sitting still. Get up. Go away. What are you trying to do? That part of our mind. And Buddha sat there unmovable, right? With the fire of attention, with the fire of concentration. He'd been through a lot. We've been through a lot. And he touched the earth. I sometimes do that when I sit down. And he said, Mara challenged him and said, by whose authority do you take this seat, this Bodhi seat that says you can awaken? And he touched the earth. And he said, this is my witness. This is my witness. This earth is my witness. So let's claim our spot. Be where we are when we're there. Renounce the clinging to self-identifying. Stop that round of samsara. That's in that moment, that shore of delusion, when we stop and really see it, that's nirvana. They're mutually arising. They come at the same time. And that's how we give life to the Buddha. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies, such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the monastery store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.